Good day, nerds, and welcome to episode 38 of the Nerd Cantina Show. Today we've got a big show covering the week's news. We're going to go ahead and get started with some talk around the Emmys, which wrapped up yesterday. We've got a new streaming service, awkwardly named Peacock. Apple is continuing to fight the EU over some massive fines. Facebook has once again defended itself by declaring that it is a publisher. And we've got Storm Area 51 and the failure that that was. Big episode. Let's go ahead and get started.
Calling back all nerds.
Nerds!
All right, and welcome back, nerds, to episode 38 of the Nerd Cantina Show. Before we get into this week's news, one of the big reasons why Steve has always done the reviews and always both written and then now on YouTube is because sometimes the movie industry is a bit misleading. Sometimes movies deserve better attention than they're getting, and sometimes you should just save your money. And Steve's got one of those for you on YouTube this week.
So, yeah, the big movie that came out this week was Brad Pitt's Ad Astra. And from the consensus of friends that I have that enjoy seeing, you know, a wide range of films, it was a great movie. I thought it was a great movie. I gave it 4.5 stars on the written and the YouTube review. But as I say in the review, and I want to get across to our podcast listeners, that the trailers are very misleading as to what to expect. So I find that the people that walked out of the theater were like, I really didn't enjoy it, I didn't like it, went into the theater expecting like a almost kind of like space Indiana Jones, I guess. You know, the trailer has the moon scenes where you see a kind of a buggy shootout. They put a lot of the shots in that are very ominous and kind of lead you to believe that this is going to be some like dark kind of like space adventure. And it's really a character piece. It features Brad Pitt the entire movie. Every other actor or actress in the film is a minor support role.
Just a set piece for him?
Yeah, they're really, no other actor is in the film for longer than 15 or 20 minutes alongside him. So it is very much a Brad Pitt performance piece, which he does great, but if you don't go in the theater kind of expecting that, you're going to walk out like, what? Like, I guess it was good, you know, but if you go in the theater, and what I said in the review is just go in expecting a cross between 2001, A Space Odyssey and Apocalypse Now. So if you're a fan of the vintage sci-fi and you're a fan of, you know, that, you know, Coppola type drawn out long character layer drama, you'll love this movie. I thought it was great, but it definitely needed a better setup for the audience going in, because I find everybody that walked out was expecting like, you know, some kind of traditional sci-fi, I guess you could call it, when this was actually a very like vintage sci-fi, like the drama of a space adventure rather than the action. The trailers didn't do it justice, and I'd hate to see this movie suffer, because it is a really well done movie, just because they didn't know how to promote it well.
I think the key to happiness is expectation management. And if your expectations are off, you will oftentimes find yourself dissatisfied with something that's good. So watch the review on YouTube, read it on the website, and set your expectations appropriately and go see the movie. Other than that, your only other choices were that or Rambo. And
the was it the writer or the original writer, the director of Rambo, said it was so bad he doesn't even want his name on it.
Yeah. So there's
I didn't write this shit. I didn't write this shit. Speaking of futuristic space stuff, we got space tellies now.
Yeah, there was some news on this week about some plans for space hotels out in Earth orbit. And like the target date for these things is one company's shooting for 2025. That's the article I saw. And then like hidden in the bottom of that article is that, oh, there's another company with a target date of like 2023. So get the hell out of here. We're going to have space hotels in 4 years.
Hey, no. When you're an astronaut and you need to hit it on the D-low, here we go.
like the business model that they're talking about is they're trying to make it to where, yeah, it's not going to be accessible to most people, but like for the people who can afford to go spend a month in Europe, they want it to be on par with the cost to go to spend a week in Europe, on par to go to space for about a week. So it costs a good couple thousand dollars, go up there. It's going to be a spinning platform with really low gravity. They're talking about having like basketball tournaments and like low G situations and all kinds of nonsense.
I mean, granted, this is the goal for many, but yeah, in what, 5 years, less than 5 years?
There's no chance.
No chance. I don't even see like being able to shoot someone in space for the cost of a European trip, right? You know, in 5 years.
I'd like to know, like, when the people who are running this company and they're talking to investors, like, what investors are they telling? They're saying, like, yeah, we're going to have a space hotel in 5 years. And people are writing this damn check.
The guys writing us these emails right now are the same dudes that need you to funnel $10,000 into your bank account for a Nigerian prince.
Yeah. there's no chance. You can barely get a hotel made in 3 years with all the nonsense and permitting and stuff you need to deal with.
Like, what are they doing? Just retrofitting an ancient space station floating around out there? Like, just to build the thing alone, like there's no way it's going to be cost of, because I have friends that take two week long, some even month long for vacations in Europe. And I'll tell you right now, these motherfuckers can't afford to go to space.
You know? It's absolutely nuts. But
and can you imagine the Instagrammers flocking to the space station and the selfies that will come from that, you know? Felt cute in space. Might delete later.
it's an exciting time. We'll see. Let's start the clock now and see if in depending on which company, 4 or 6 years, we've got a spinning space hotel.
Yeah, I'd be willing to bet negative.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's move into just some entertainment news. So we're recording this on September 23rd, Monday, the day after the Emmys, and there's a little talk to be had in the sense of entertainment and TV news here.
Yeah, it's we love our TV shows, so this is a big night in television, and most of the ones that took home the awards are pretty well known. I can't say that I watched all of them. Some of them were kind of new to me. I guess I'm going to have to do some backpedaling and watch a few shows and see what that be about. But for the most part, you know, you got HBO cleaning up as they usually do. Chernobyl won a bunch. Game of Thrones won a bunch. And then people are going to have to start recognizing streaming services as, you know, as equals into the network television. They're not going to be able to ignore these people and try to keep them locked out of the entertainment world much longer.
Yeah, and I mean, it really started last year. Was the first year that HBO didn't win the most Emmys. So last year, HBO and Netflix tied with like 17. This year, HBO had a huge showing of 34. But you've got to keep HBO in the category of streaming service now, because that's the large part.
I mean, honestly, aren't they kind of like the original streamers? Like they were before the days of the internet. You couldn't stream anything per se, but they were the one channel that was like, look, you want to watch us? You got to pay us extra money on top of what you're paying for cable. Like you don't just get an HBO, like, so yeah. They were the first kind of like monthly subscription channel.
Yeah, and then now you've got HBO Max, Warner Media's streaming service that, you know, they've all had HBO Go for a long time, or HBO Now, and now they're going to have HBO Max. But yeah, they took 34 Emmys, HBO being huge. But then right behind them was Netflix with 27, Amazon Prime had 15, and then, you know, the closest broadcast television company was NBC with 7. And yeah, it just goes to show the Emmys are, it's only a small measurement of success, but it does indicate, you know, where a lot of the quality is coming from, and it's the streaming services hands down.
You know, and I think a lot of it has to do with the freedom of a streaming service, you know, since you pay for it, they aren't really beholden to the whole big boardroom of censors and brand executives and advertisers that all bottleneck creativity for these TV shows. You know, if you have a show like The Boys, never gets made in a world with only network television. It never does, you know. And
well, and even shows, you know, we talk about, you know, Game of Thrones obviously won a ton, and that gets made through, you know, HBO. But you look at shows that are winning like Ozark and stuff like that. These really good gripping drama shows, they don't survive a 23 episode season. You cannot maintain that pacing. You cannot maintain that quality of storytelling when you've got an entire season to fill, which is what broadcast television does. So the new streaming model, all of these shows that are winning these top awards, they're in that 10 episode season, 12 episode season, where they do good justice to a story in a shorter period of time, and then they shut it down, and who cares?
And I have to believe that a lot of that plays into this is convenience. Now, like, I remember back in the day being one of the only people on the planet that knew how to set their VCR timer to record a show properly and automatically, you know? So if you got a favorite show, but your kids got piano lessons or football practice till 8 o'clock and your favorite show comes on 7, you just missed out. And there was no way to catch these episodes again until the summer reruns came. And things like when we were kids, man, you had to be in your house glued in front of the TV for your shit. Must-see
TVs Thursdays on NBC and stuff. You had to be home.
Yeah, so I have to believe that the convenience of being able to watch these shows on your schedule at your leisure is benefiting, you know, the way people, you know, the amount of people that consume these products. You know, it's gotta help it in some way, at least.
Yeah, absolutely it does. And I think, like I said, I really think it comes down, Emmys don't focus so much on ratings or anything else. They focus on really quality, and just the streaming services are providing greater freedom for quality production, for you know, there is no stretching these things out. There's no real issues there. So I think you're going to continue to see this. And, you know, broadcast TV is going to continue. It has to continue. There's still millions of people that have their rabbit ears, that get their news and get everything else from NBC and Fox. And that has to continue to exist. It's just their relevance in quality programming.
I mean, yeah, some people still have flip phones, but eventually you motherfuckers are going to have to convert.
I mean, if they do, then the government's got to step up and give internet to all.
Well, I had this conversation at my daughter's birthday party too with a few friends, that I think the demand for the streaming services that are all going to be coming out, and cloud gaming with Stadia dropping in a couple months and Xbox and PlayStation moving to cloud gaming, is going to put a huge demand on access to broadband internet. And a lot of these cities and towns that have subpar internet connections, they're going to have to step it up. Like, Comcast is going to have to step it up at some point, because, I mean, they're going to have a hard time explaining to their customers why they can't.
It's Elon to the rescue. He's already said his Starlink satellite is well above projections. I think they're looking at like the southern half of the United States being covered next year.
I'm waiting to see what happens when the southern half of the hemisphere is covered in a thunderstorm cloud. If you still get internet, like, satellite TV's been around forever, and, you know, our dad had it for a while, and I'll never forget, man, when storms would come over during your favorite shows, like we said again, if you weren't glued in front of your TV and you just missed your show, you were assed out. So when he was watching, you know, fuck, whatever he was watching back in the day, L.A. Law or some shit.
West Wing.
You know, yeah. And the signal would lose. We left the house. Let's put it like that. You did not want to be around that man. So I'm wondering if it's going to be the same thing. You're going to be in the middle of a Call of Duty match. You're going to be on a 9-kill kill streak waiting for that 10-kill care package to drop and just fuck everybody up, and all of a sudden, boop. Like, sorry, no net. We got a little cloud above us, and we'll have to wait 15 minutes till this passes by. You know, I don't know. I'm waiting to see. Like, I'm skeptical at this point.
Yeah, I think the frequency bands and everything else that they're operating in, and then the total satellite coverage dwarfs anything that DirecTV had in the past. I think it's gonna be fine, but we'll have to see over time. But there's, you know, the Emmys is being a big night for TV.
Yeah, we'll have a link in the show notes so you can see all the winners and losers of the night. Yeah, it's always an interesting night, especially when within this current climate that of politics and social awareness that we're in.
Yeah, Steve and I are dancing around because we don't know if we pull the thread on our opinions on some of these things, like the fact that the Emmys didn't even have a host.
Yeah,
it's an interesting time.
It's truly sad to me, really. It's just sad that, you know, we live in a day and age where you have to walk on eggshells everywhere that you do, and you can't have, you make a mistake 20 years ago, they're going to make you pay for it now. There's no forgiveness. There's no, you know, accepting of what was societal norms of the time. And what are societal norms now? You know, there's no correlation or way of looking at in that in a certain context that, you know, it's if you, yeah, I mean.
Yeah, and, you know, the Emmys being it is a night for actors, to celebrate actors, and they can't find a single actor that they're willing to support to be the headliner for this thing. You know, I think it's come down to a point where it's like, is Tom Hanks available? I think he can't offend anybody. If he's not available, just don't hire anybody. We'll just do this as an open thing. We'll have some awkward Homer Simpson animated opening for the show, because we cannot trust anybody to not offend a portion of the world.
And it's getting to the point where, like, I understand it's a big platform for people and everyone has their good causes and stuff, but in the past, you almost kind of needed to take the award speech time and get across, like, a message you really cared about. But in this day and age of Twitter and YouTube and just, you know, does your voice really need to be heard right now? Can you not just accept an award given to you by your peers for your success without shoving your own personal agenda and message down our throat?
I tend to sometimes respect the artists who do that, just because while you say that they have the ability to communicate their message at all times, they do, to their Twitter followers. They probably already support their message, already understand who the hell they are, what they're saying. And then you win this award and you now gain millions of viewership that the millions of people who are watching have either seen you pretending to be somebody else, or they don't really ever find out what you're really about, because your followers are your followers already. So this is an opportunity to platform.
And that's fine if you want to try to reach those people. But you also have to realize that, you know, you're going to turn away kind of people like me. I don't want to, you know, I agree with most.
This is why I don't watch
agree. Yeah, exactly. I agree with most of these people, but at the same time, it's like time and place, folks. Time and place. I'm here to celebrate good television and see who wins and maybe some quality shows that I've never heard of, like that Fleabag. I never watched that, you know, so I'm probably going to try to pound that out and see what that be about. But like, I get pounded with these messages on a daily through social media, Twitter, news, everything. Like, can I just have a moment to relax and enjoy something? You know,
yeah, but they're not talking to you. They're talking to the less socially aware.
No, they're not talking to me because I changed the fucking channel.
Me too. I didn't even turn it on in the first place. I had other places to be. But I know, like I said, I'm not terribly against. I think it does get overdone, and sometimes the messages are poorly communicated. Sometimes they're on point, and sometimes they
there have been some pretty good cultural moments in these speeches. So I'm not going to knock them all, but it's. For every one good one, there's three ones where you just roll your eyes and you're like, come on, all right, let's go. Jesus, like, I get the point. It's getting to the point where, you're only going to have the, so how you said that these actors and actresses have their Twitter followers and those are the ones they speak to when they're using that. These award shows are going to end up turning to the same thing because anybody in the middle or anybody who disagrees or anybody who just wants to fucking relax on a Sunday night and watch an award show isn't going to view it anymore. And again, the only people you're going to be talking to eventually are your fucking Twitter followers and the people that you talk to on a regular basis. You're not going to be able to reach that undecided or opposing view audience and make your case because we're so sick and fucking tired of it that I'm not going to tune in anymore.
I mean, maybe I don't tune in, but even not tuning in this morning, I still see headlines. Every news organization, every article is picking up what some of these people said or whatever else.
Exactly why you don't need to tune in. Exactly why you don't need to tune in. It's because 7 in the morning, we could pull up an article, see every nominee, see every winner, get a YouTube video of whatever crazy speech, see whose boob was halfway out in a fucking dress, who wore a crazy ass motherfucking cowboy hat that stuck out halfway off the stage. Like, we get all that information the next morning. But does that help the network who's putting together these multi-million dollar award shows? No, it doesn't. Yeah. So
who cares about the network?
Well, speaking of networks. Anywho,
yeah, speaking of networks, let's go ahead and move to... So we do have news. We talked about streaming services dominating Emmys. And that's before Disney Plus, by the way. Disney Plus bought the biggest ad space for during the Emmys.
They better make a seat for that motherfucking mouse next year, boy.
First commercial break was a Disney Plus commercial, but you've now got another streaming service that in the last week has announced more of their details. Everybody knew an NBC Universal app or streaming service was coming out. They've now named it Peacock, which
is a very unfortunate.
I can't remember. So my wife used to have an old Katy Perry CD. This had to be over a decade ago. And there's a song of hers that is, it's a song about peacock. And it's just her over and over again, just singing like the peacock, cock, cock, cock. And like just constantly like drawing out cock. So now I can't talk about Peacock streaming service without in the back of my head going cock, cock, cock. But... and I'm a big Katy Perry fan, by the way.
There's lots of us out there.
And so some of the news coming out from them is in April, they're looking to launch. So they're going to be a bit behind these newest ones with Disney Plus coming out in November. They're going to have an ad and premium model. So kind of doing the Hulu thing. They're going to have a cheaper version where you can get ads still. And then it's going to be some time before NBC gets back all of their properties, like The Office, which has been huge for Netflix and other things. They can't get the rights back to some of these shows like Parks and Rec and stuff like that until 2021. But the plan is that they're going to be yanking all of their properties from everybody else.
Yeah, eventually contracts will run out for all these shows and people are going to be taking their toys back.
They will have some specific content designed for Peacock. Cock. So it will be they got a Battlestar Galactica series, which I'm a big Battlestar Galactica fan. It originally said it was going to be a reboot. It's not a reboot. It's going to be some kind of playoff of what already exists in the Battlestar Galactica.
They tried to carry forward Battlestar with that Caprica. And I enjoyed Caprica. I did, and they bailed on that real fucking fast.
Yeah. Yeah, didn't do well, but they got Battlestar Galactica. Some of the other rumored new shows is they're going to apparently have a Saved by the Bell continuation with Mario Lopez.
I'm here for that show. like especially especially with get the washed up ones, like get them all in there. I'm so about it.
Yeah, so they've got a couple, and then they got some other shows that we'll post an article up there. Nothing that screams, no big draws. It doesn't look like they signed any major production companies or you know,
but they have time, right? Or anything. I mean, they have time.
Yeah. So I'm sure they're going to get in the game where they're going to have some kind of epic. They're going to have some fantasy shows. They're going to do just like everybody else is doing and signing on some of these epic fantasy novel series, signing on various things.
If you're a fantasy or sci-fi author out there right now, get yourself an agent, get yourself a publicist, get in front of these board meetings, and someone's going to buy your story.
Yeah. So April 2020, another, I don't know, probably $4.99 coming at you.
If taking my fins, just taking fins out of my wallet.
Although it's a weird time for this week, you know, one of my favorite shows being Seinfeld announcing that they're going to Netflix.
Yeah.
And that's the same week. NBC's got to be thinking, motherfucker.
Because
Seinfeld owns he owns all his rights. Like, NBC doesn't own him. And you know NBC's got to be like, really?
Jerry's got his Comedians in Cars with Coffee on,
which is great,
on Netflix. You know, so he has a relationship with Netflix. They were like, all right, we lost The Office. Didn't they lose Friends a while ago too?
Yeah,
So they lost some of the big ones, you know, and they're just like, all right. So they went to their boy Jerry, and they're like, hey man, we need one of these iconic TV series to keep on, so people can put something on when they go to sleep.
Yeah, and that's exactly it. So, yeah, Seinfeld going to Netflix. I mean, I have all the DVD box sets. I got it. But who takes out a DVD nowadays? I look at these DVDs in a bookshelf, and there's never a chance.
It blows my fucking mind every day that you can still walk into a Best Buy or a Walmart and buy a new DVD. Like, they still take the new movies. Like, you can buy Endgame in DVD. That'd be like still being able to buy a cassette. You know, like, who's making cassettes of the latest Taylor Swift CD? Nobody. Why are we still making dead medium? You know, like, it blows my mind that you could still go get a fucking DVD nowadays. Like, if you can't afford a Blu-ray player, like, you have other things in your life you need to be taking care of than watching whatever the fuck you just bought.
Yeah, before you drop another $20 on a DVD.
No, they're like $4.99. $10 $10 for a brand new movie.
Not the new movies.
Yeah, they're like $9.99 for a brand new movie. You get Endgame right now for probably like $9.99, $14.99 tops.
Fake news. Not true. All right. That's another big topic that I know I showed you the article earlier in the week, and it got you heated. So I'm going to provide some context as we
these motherfuckers, man. These motherfuckers.
So we got some tech news around Apple. And I just essentially gave Steve the headline that Apple was getting a fine, essentially 13 billion euros, almost $15 million by the EU. But that's really what the headline was. That it's not that they were getting fined $13 billion. What they were doing is they're paying back taxes of $13 billion forced by the EU. And what's really weird about this is, and I'm sure there's, if you're in Europe, or whether you're, you know, a believer of the EU or not, this is like a big reach for the EU in the sense that this started years ago, about 4 years ago. And what was found was, starting back in 2003, Ireland was not charging Apple the same tax rate that they were charging any other corporations. They had Apple paying like 0.05% taxes of a corporate tax rate, different than other people, incentivizing Apple, which to the tune of, over the years, 13 billion euros worth of tax savings given to them. EU has pushed down on Ireland and said, Ireland, you're going to go get that money. Like, you will charge them appropriate taxes. Apple was putting a lot of their manufacturing, a lot of their stocking into Ireland, essentially because of that, creating jobs in Ireland. But the rest of the EU was a bit upset about it. So they forced Ireland to go ahead and get these taxes. This money's been paid a couple years ago. So this EU put this on Ireland a couple years ago, and Ireland and Apple are together appealing to wipe away this $13 billion in taxes.
To me, this is just truly upsetting for the simple fact that they don't pay shit here. Like, we are watching these huge companies be, you know, being upheld to pay their share of taxes. And you know, these are American companies. This is an American company. And they're being held to a higher tax standard in Europe than we hold them to ourselves.
Well, and what's funny is Ireland's defense of this is, one, that yes, they're bringing them jobs, and two, it's an American company that owes the vast majority of their taxes to America. And then you look at it, it's like, you sons of bitches, because you know they're not paying shit to us.
Yeah, right? Yeah, yeah. You know, so like, and especially in this day and age where we talk about the 1% and, you know, the Amazon's paying no taxes, it's we're about to flip into 2020. It's about to be an election year. It's an election cycle perpetually in this fucking country. You know, we've been debating on who's going to be the next president already for the last 9 months, 12 months. You know, and taxation's always a huge subject in there, and who pays and who doesn't pay. And to just watch foreign countries get their fair share while we sit here and argue, it's so mind-boggling that this isn't a bigger issue here, that we don't have people in our government and our representatives looking out for us the same way the EU is looking out for Europe. Like, it's beyond fucking frustrating. It's oh fuck, man.
Ireland states that they're looking out for their citizens by the tax cuts because it has driven Apple to put more in their country disproportionately from the rest of Europe because of that tax shelter.
Well, the EU has created somewhat of a United States kind of scenario in Europe. So, like, we have 50 states and you have states' rights, and each state can undercut each other with state taxes to get incentives to get companies to move to their location to create jobs and whatnot. But then you have the overall federal government that needs to say, okay, well, despite whatever you're paying in this state and this state, you're going to have to pay this federally that we'll divvy out to the entire nation. That's essentially kind of what EU is. It takes all these countries, Ireland, you know, fucking France, Germany, all these countries, and bundles them into a union, you know, and these countries have certain freedoms to do things on their own. You know, but overall, the EU also has to get their cut to divvy out evenly amongst their, you know, the entire EU. So it's very much a similar scenario. I don't know the details of, you know, what we would call states' rights are for, like, countries like Ireland and things like that. What rights they do have to set their own tax rates and things like that, but.
Yeah, I mean, apparently there's an argument to be heard because it's been taken up. The reason why this is in recent news is because it's been taken up by the second highest court of appeals in the EU. So this is 4 years coming, and 4 years ago, EU thought they had obviously the right to compel Ireland to go collect these taxes, and now 4 years later, it's still being pushed up through the highest courts of appeals that Ireland does not need to collect this money, that it was. The tax shelters or breaks that were given to Apple was within their rights.
Yeah. Meanwhile, we just let them funnel all their money to the Cayman Islands, wash it, launder it, send it back here so that none of us get a fucking cut, and we have people rationing insulin and dying, and you know, and it's just so fucked up. It's just so fucked up on so many levels. Move on to the next one before I just get really pissed and I start fucking flipping the fuck out.
Oh yeah, because this one's better for you. Here's another one. Now that we've got Steve warmed up with Apple, the other tech giant that we'll talk about right now, because there's some recent news, and that's coming with Facebook. Who, you know, there's if you don't care about these things or pay attention, there's this debate on whether they're a platform or a publisher, and they come with different regulation. Yeah,
why don't we give a little bit of info on the difference between a platform and a publisher, just real quick, kind of cliff notes.
Yeah, so essentially, a publisher, you think of, you know, normal New York Times or whatever else, they control their content. They are responsible for their content, which means that obviously they can be held liable for their content. But because a publisher is protected by the Bill of Rights, by freedom of speech, and they have the ability to censor or to moderate their content. And then the platform is just stating that, hey, you're a tech company. You're purely a tech company. You are in no way responsible or contributing to content. And it's purely just, you know, if you think of Facebook as, hey, it's the digital billboard that people just pin stuff on. Nobody cares what gets put on there. Facebook doesn't care. They're just providing the billboard. And when it's convenient for Facebook, they are a platform. When they were held under the congressional hearings and Mark Zuckerberg had to go and answer to the congressman, he clearly stated that they're a tech company. They're a tech company first. Yes, they have some responsibility for the content, he stated it to Congress, but ultimately they are a tech company. They're not a publisher. But then now this is what they've gotten now is they're currently being sued by a Laura Loomer, who I don't know who she is. She's a super right-wing extremist, but she's been removed from everything, from Twitter, from Facebook, from everything. And the issue is she is suing based off of being deplatformed or taken off. And Facebook within there has claimed that as a publisher, it is their free speech right to remove people and to censor their content. So now that is convenient because they're defending their actions. They're stating it. And why it's important is, do I care about Laura Loomer? No. Very few people do. But what this continues to do is just sets legal precedents and it defines who they are when they do things like this. So there's some concern. So that's the, I guess, maybe short version, I don't know, of really where platform and publisher divide.
Well, it basically comes down to, you know, so they had the big Alex Jones thing with the Sandy Hook and claiming that, you know, it was staged and these were all actors and things like that. Facebook, YouTube, all these, you know, quote unquote platforms removed Alex Jones from that, citing terms of service and stuff like that. So now if you claim yourself to be a publisher, if you allow an Alex Jones to stay on your program for X amount of time, Alex Jones just lost a lawsuit. Facebook, YouTube, and all these other, you know, publishers are partly liable in that then. So not only as they sued Alex Jones, the publishers that Alex Jones was using to push the message that he got sued for also carry some liability.
Yeah, and that's the big reason why this distinction, this legal distinction of them stating in a court case that they're a publisher and they have the right, it means that, well, if you're going to claim the right that you can remove people that you don't agree with, it means you could be held accountable.
Then you also have a duty to know who you're publishing and what the ramifications of that are.
So I think it's important in context when we talk about that, right? That they can be sued for libel because as a publisher, they have to have some kind of integrity there. I think it's also concerning in the sense that what it also shapes out is a precedent that if they're a publisher and they can choose essentially who they allow to continue, that they could really arbitrarily then also kind of marginalize or get rid of certain sides of
arguments. Yeah, and we already see it with shadow banning and you know, the pay to get to your audience. You know, they put you behind a paywall to make sure that your posts get to your target demographics and things like that.
Just think about if Facebook one day really wanted to back a very certain political party or person, and they wanted to really just shift their editorial focus towards that, they would dominate an election if they chose.
Well, that's what Tulsi Gabbard's suing Google for now. Is she was the highest search candidate after she chopped Kamala Harris down at the knees after the second to last debate. She was the most Google searched candidate. And
they shut down her ad account.
And they shut down her ad account. And it mysteriously was shut down for a couple days after the debate, right as the debate went on. And then
I think it was only shut down for a couple hours, but those couple hours was a huge search volume that she missed out on.
You know, so you cannot tell me that that's not politically motivated. And if they say they're a platform, then one, that's fucked up and should be illegal. And two, if you're a publisher, now we have to deal with the fact that Google is going to selectively control what information we are privy to as American citizens. And that's a scary thought.
Yeah, I mean, the future of politics and stuff through these tech companies, it's a new problem. It needs new solutions.
And we know how great our government is at solving these problems in a timely manner.
And that's the problem. You're going to apply like, you know, publisher rights and publisher responsibilities on Facebook. There's no way. You just can't. Like, it's different. It's not the New York Times. It's not a single editor who can control the content. When you're looking at millions of content, articles being shared, opinions.
But then we need platform regulation. We need to make sure that if Facebook is going to be a platform, that they stay a platform. That you back off. You send out the info, you wipe your hands, you walk away. And in order in doing that, you have to leave the Alex Jones of the world. Like, you can't just say, well, he's saying vile stuff. Well, it's a free country.
No, yeah.
It's like, we have freedom of speech to be a vile asshole if you want to be. You know, like, there's no law that says you can't be a dick. Like, you know, but Facebook wants to be able to say, like, no, come use Facebook. It's a family place and it's your safe space and you can do this and you can do that. Well, then you got to hire a team of a million motherfuckers to police it. You can't have it both ways. You can't. Like, I'm sorry.
That's the challenge, right? And I said that's why I think there needs to be a legal distinction or something that separates them. They can't be considered publishers. It never, never can Facebook be held to the same standards as a newspaper.
But as of right now, they sure as fuck ain't platforms either.
No. And they're moving more and more towards, you know, controlling content, controlling viewership, and controlling those who participate. So it is getting worse in that sense. So that's why I said there needs to be a new legal distinction that states what a platform is, what they can and can't do, some way that separates them. They can't be publishers. That is unmanageable, and it's foolish to think that they ever could be. But then if they're going to call themselves a platform, then what,
you know,
what
and for the majority of the country, it's hard for people to contextualize this because it really doesn't affect them. You know, if I'm a small business owner and I get probably 60% of my work through Facebook tags, you know, it's the new way of referring somebody. So is before you used to get referrals through people talking at the local grocery store or at the wherever they see each other, PTA meetings and stuff like that. Now you just get people putting a post out saying, looking for a good electrician, and people start tagging away. Well, if my tags don't get to me, or people can't tag me, or they're blocking these posts from me and I can never respond, that affects my business. That affects my livelihood.
I'm going to go ahead and claim that, you know, the concept that this may not affect most people is a bullshit statement in itself, because I don't care.
Well, it may not that it doesn't affect, but they don't notice it. It's
maybe
not,
you don't notice it, but that's what I'm saying. But to the understanding that this does affect everybody, and so, you know, Steve, you had me watch that Netflix documentary, The Great Hack. If you haven't seen it or you care to look at it, it's all about the nonsense that went on with Cambridge Analytica following the last election. And whether you participated in Facebook or not, whether, you know, you can opt out of Facebook, it doesn't change the fact that it is impacting all of our lives through these election cycles.
And globally, too. This isn't just a United States and European problem.
Have controlled their countries through Facebook. There are significant issues and the exploitation of these platforms and their lack of transparency and control and integrity in the way that they are using the
and the scary thing that documentary kind of shed a light on is that there were smarter people realizing the value of data and what you can do with it before any of us could kind of catch on to know not to sign that terms of service agreement or to not, you know, like nobody could quantify, one, the value of our data, which in the documentary they state data is now the highest priced commodity in the world, that data surpassed oil in value, and no one knew that it could be used in such a manipulative way. You know, like the last election was decided by 70,000 people. 70,000 people in three different states essentially decided who controls this country. And for a company like Facebook to influence 70,000 people is nothing. You know, and like they said in the documentary, they weren't targeting people like us who are, you know, stay educated and make up their own minds. They were able to find
and live in places like Illinois and California that don't matter.
That don't matter, yeah. but they were able to find people that were on the fence. So they were able to take data points and find people that were kind of wishy-washy. They didn't know where they wanted to sit, and then target them with specific campaigns to push them over the edge in one direction or the other. And that's just really fucking scary, is that there's, you know, there's always going to be that middle of the ground, you know, voter or audience or whatever. And to know that companies now have means to dissect your brain and then manipulate it in these ways is so fucked up.
Yeah, and the scary thing with Cambridge Analytica was it wasn't even about, you know, you didn't have to opt into it in the sense.
Yeah, if your asshole buddy took that personality test, they went right into their friends list and took all the
skimmed all of their data as well.
And it wasn't in the, you know, it wasn't like data that you put up, like where I live, what my birthday is, am I male, like da 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 da. They were scanning your posts for keywords. They were looking at your photos for groups, like they. The, you know, so that's what was kind of eye-opening to me is I just assumed it was whatever of the bio information that I filled out they'd be able to get from me, you know, birth date, location, where I went to high school, so my education level, you know, things like that. But to actually be able to scan all my posts, whether my page is private or not, and
oh yeah, you do a celebrity lookalike, you know, survey or whatever it is, and then all of a sudden, everybody you've ever interacted with on Facebook is now scraped for election data.
And what's scarier to me is that the one of the main guys of the documentary sued to get his data back. Like, you can't have it. I never agreed to give it to you. You have to give it back or pay this giant fine. And they're just like, yeah, we'll just pay that fine, dude. So one man's data was worth holding on to, you know, because one, it sets precedent. You know, if they give him his data, then everybody's gonna be asking for their data. But that's just how valuable this data is to these companies, that they were willing to be like, oh, you're gonna hit us with $100 million fine if we don't give this dude his data back. All right, no, that's cool, we'll pay it. like what?
It's an interesting thing. Steve and I talk a great deal about politics and things, and there's no public endorsement of any candidates, but there's some good questions that need to be had in these election cycles, which is why like these seemingly no-name candidates like Andrew Yang become important, not because I think he has a chance to get elected or that I think he'd even be a good president. It just comes down to I like him being a part of the conversation because he's the only person who is on either party in a national stage who's talking about he wants to protect digital data, our biometric and digital data under property law. So that way companies like Facebook or whatever else cannot monetize these things without actually conducting theft, without stealing from us and then owing us
compensation
fees and penalties and compensations, so that way nobody could ever scrape our data again without conducting, you know, essentially millions of micro thefts. And it's a great concept. Like, yeah, how do we decentivize corporations from doing this?
And that's kind of how the American people need to have it presented to them. Like, you need to, like, if you don't feel like you got robbed, because, you know, most people just think in their head, well, what do I care if you know, so-and-so knows where I shop or da-da-da-da. It's not that you necessarily need to care that they know what you're doing or what you're buying or stuff like that, but they're taking that information and selling it to people, and you are not getting a cut. So you know, that...
And that's on the harmless side. And then on the harmful side is those people are using that data to create psychological profiles that they are using to exploit and sway massive things like Brexit and presidential elections.
Yeah, it's definitely a new modern problem that has never been seen in a society ever. I mean, I guess you can compare it to when the printing press was made, you know, because people used to read a newspaper and take that shit verbatim, you know, and think that it was gospel, you know. So this is on a multiple scale that I can't even quantify, but not since the printing press was invented have we had something affect our society in this kind of way. And when the printing press was affected, you can do some research and things, it drastically changed our society. You know, information has power, and the spread of information or misinformation has drastic ramifications.
I think, I don't know if you want to continue down this.
If you want more information, you can look up the show notes. You can go listen to either one of our episodes with Cory Doctorow. He is very versed in these things and gives you a couple points of action that you can take on these issues. Again, we talk about this on the Nerd Cantina because this is in the nerd subject. This is your data. This is. There are the people doing this are nerds, essentially, are sitting.
Yeah, these are our tech companies that while they bring us a bunch of great stuff within our tech world, there's also a lot of potential for harm, and we think it's worthwhile talking about. So we'll continue to bore a couple of you and hopefully enlighten a few.
But let's end it on a light note. How about it? Huh? Should we?
Well. Yeah, let's go ahead and end it with something we talked about months ago.
Because
it was Storm Area 51.
Yeah, D-Day happened, and, it was quite an event. Oh, okay.
Yeah, the biggest thing is, what a fucking disappointment society is. All right? Over 2 million people sign a petition to show up to Area 51, and you get a couple hundred.
Isn't that typical? You send out a bunch of invites. My daughter just turned one on Saturday. All right. So I sent out a bunch of invites, and you get a handful of people that can't be bothered to RSVP. So you don't know if they're coming, if you're going to have enough food or not. And then a bunch of people do RSVP, and then you get the no shows, and then you get the excuses of, you know, my kid's just being really cranky, or I got a headache or whatever. So this is just on a grander scale and with aliens, you know, 2 million people RSVP'd. You got a couple thousand that actually showed. Seems legit.
No, I think you only got like 250 that showed up at the gates of Area 51. You had a couple thousand at like adjacent, like in Vegas, people who didn't even drive to the heart of the desert. They just stopped at Vegas and just and had an alien themed party. And then you got a couple of people out in like
of the articles said. It just turned into like alien Burning Man.
Yeah. So really, like I said, the for me, the biggest part of this is 2 million people, your word is your bond. You said you were showing up. You show the fuck up. And you get you Naruto run this thing, and you
the video of the dude Naruto running behind the TV anchor was priceless, though.
Yeah.
If that's all we got out of this, it was worth it. It was worth it.
That
Because you know there was a million people just going, what the fuck is a Naruto run?
Yeah. Fact. You've got the... If you don't know what we're talking about, there's a news anchor who was just reporting there, and all of a sudden there's just some random dude in like a blue windbreaker, just Naruto running.
Hauling ass, man. Hauling ass. It was great. You know,
he's the only hero of the Area 51.
Yeah, no. Yeah, he's the real MVP of that event. But well, yeah.
That and the two people who got arrested, which there's two arrests that were made public, and one of them was for some level of intoxication. Got it. and the second one
also
was for
seems legit.
Indecent exposure. So
someone
probably
whipped out his little green man and, and caught a case.
I was thinking more on the other side that they mooned him and gave him like a probe this.
A moon landing. We had a moon landing in sight.
But no.
No, it is.
That's all you get.
Yeah, it just shows how many people will click on a cool idea. That's why I hate these like online petitions and stuff. You know, like anybody will give a click, but when it comes time to actually like do some action, it is going to be a very small sliver of the people who actually clicked. You know, you can get a bunch of morons to click a link. Well, we can't, obviously, because our show is not reaching the target audience that we would like it to. But if you create a catchy headline or create a cool like event, I mean, how many? Like we said it back in I can't remember what show, but Chicago had that crocodile in a lake, and it was like someone set up an event to go meet Chance the Snapper, and like mad people just like, for sure I'll do it, for sure I'll do it, you know, and knowing damn well they're never gonna go, knowing damn well they don't care. It's just like they want people to see on their news feed that this event happens and it's so and so is going. It's like, you know, Bob's gonna go to the Chance the Snapper thing, or you know, Linda's going to the Area 51. No, Linda, you weren't gonna go to fucking Area 51. Quit bullshitting me.
Also this week though, maybe to appease the Storm Area 51 guys, the U.S. Navy confirmed their sightings of UFOs. I don't know if you saw that.
No, I did not see that.
Yeah, so a couple of years ago there was there's been a bunch of like videos.
See, but when they say UFOs, they will not say the name alien. So UFO is just an unidentified flying object. So they seen something in the air that they don't know what it was. They won't say we seen aliens.
Right. And they don't even call it UFOs. I think they call it like...
Yeah, there is a new name for it.
Unidentified aerial something. It's not UFO.
UFO has the alien context now, so yeah. They had to change the acronym. Like, I do know that. I can't remember what it is, though, either.
But yeah, the Navy confirmed a couple of these instances saying, like, yeah, no, we legit don't know what these things are. Those are real videos of our pilots talking about and, like, tracking these things in the sky that just... fly away and disappear and do weird shit, and we don't know what they are. But so that's them appeasing the space UFO conspiracy theorists of the week.
Yeah, get your tinfoil hat and
there were people legitimately wearing tinfoil hats there though.
Well, you got to.
Yeah,
you got to. I'm not surprised if there wasn't tinfoil hat merch. You know, like that's what they. Well, a couple articles said is that just turned into a big alien Burning Man in a place for people to sell shitty T-shirts. You know, I stormed Area 51 and all I got was this lousy T-shirt. Oh man, all right. This fucking world, man. I don't know, man. I think about it all the time. And you know, we could have just been born in the 20s and be wearing a, you know, a nice hat and three-piece suit and going about our day, reading our paper, keeping our wives in the kitchen. But instead, we lucked out and we were born in this crazy time of humanity where we're able to talk about these asinine things on our podcast. It's an interesting time to be alive.
For sure. That wraps up our weekly news here. And, I guess as always, thanks for listening.
Yeah, we're working on some good cantina conversations coming up. We try to do them weekly, but it is hard to schedule guests and things like that. So bear with us as we hash out some of these bookings and time schedules and things like that. So as always, we'll give you your weekly nerd news. But the cantina conversations, I think with the end of summer, will start coming more regularly as people lock themselves in their house for the winter and have nothing better to do than hop on a microphone and talk to us two assholes.
So stay tuned, ensure that you like and subscribe on your podcast player, and you'll get those cantina conversations as well as our weekly news on, as they come out. Join us on Facebook as we talked about how they're skimming your data, but it's okay. The Nerd Cantina is safe.
They can have our memes. They can have our memes.
Yeah, join us over at the nerdcantina.com/community, which will take you to our closed Facebook group, and let us know what you think. Let us know how your opinions on these topics as we continue the conversations there.
And subscribe to the YouTube channel. I do the movie reviews on YouTube, where you can stare at my ugly mug as I give you my opinion. Or you can go to the nerdcantina.com and go to the review section and just get the literary version.
All right. Well, again, thanks for listening and have a good week.
See you, nerds.